Welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review. Our several-year mission will be to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. We will be reviewing every Star Trek comic book ever published. These stories have been released by Gold Key, Marvel, DC, Malibu, Wildstorm, Tokyo Press, IDW, and others. Star Trek and all that the Star Trek universe contains is copyrighted by CBS Studios, Inc.
Hello and welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review with Donovan and Ken. Episode number 441, recorded January 12th, 2025?
So towards the end of last year, IDW started releasing a new ongoing, and that being Lower Decks.
Yes. So they did miniseries before.
Right.
But now we got an official ongoing going.
Right. Yep. And we got two issues today, issue one and two. We figured we'd start at the beginning.
Yeah. Well, good idea. As people do. I thought it was an interesting choice to have Lower Decks as an ongoing, especially since the series is canceled.
Indeed.
What do you think? Well, it ended because it was canceled.
Technically, all Star Trek's going to end at some point or has ended, and that doesn't mean I want to not read about it. So I was happy. I was happy to see it continue, even if it is just in the comic book. Yeah.
Right. And there might be a movie. We've heard something about the possibility of it, but... Right. But, you know, quite frankly, they're... Well, what, with Skydance... acquisition, merger, whatever you want to call it. I don't know. It just seems like a lot of things are wrapping up.
Right.
Or wrapped up in 2024. So, and I know there's some things coming out in 2025, but I don't know. It just seems like a low point, hopefully a temporary low point for Star Trek.
Yeah. It's been a rough year because we lost Discovery, Lower Decks, Prodigy's pretty much dead.
Yeah.
Not officially, but it is.
Well, yeah.
So, yeah,
I guess
really
if Netflix
only
wants
what?
To carry it on.
Yeah, but I doubt they do. Or they would have said something by now.
Right. Which is too bad, because that last season was really good.
I know, right? With Wesley and everything.
And his sweater. Yes.
Yeah.
That's good.
I thought they were about to reference it at the end of Lower Decks when they were doing the multiverse stuff there. I was like, oh man, are they going to tie into Prodigy? But they never did.
No. And
but anyways.
Yeah.
But yeah, 2024, rough year for Star Trek stuff, but hopefully it doesn't mean it's the end. This year we get Section
Starfleet
31.
Academy. Oh, Section 31. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The movie. Right.
The movie. Yeah, and Starfleet.
Now, Starfleet Academy starts this year, right? 2025? I never saw a specific date, but...
I haven't seen a date either, yeah. Okay. The only thing I know for sure is Strange New Worlds and Section 31.
Yeah. Okay, which seems kind of light to me. Kind of light.
Yeah, definitely compared to the last few years.
I think I don't know whether the YouTube algorithm are throwing more of them at me, but I'm seeing a bunch of fan Star Trek productions popping up.
Oh, really?
In my feed. Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of them thrown at me. So I don't know whether that's just the algorithm or maybe there is more activity. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either.
But I think they're still restricted to being like only 15 minutes long, though, right?
Right.
Or less.
And they can't have
you can't make any money.
Arc, and you can't make money, and you can't have guests from previous Trek stuff.
Oh, really? That too?
That was at one point, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. Well, whatever. But let's get with our books for the day.
Yeah. So we got Lower Decks, two issues. I think you got the first one, right, Ken?
I do. That would be bad if I didn't. But yes, I got the first one. I'll be going first. And then we'll be saving the best for last with Donovan at issue two. So issue number one had a published date of November 2024. And the creative team is writer Ryan North, artist Derek Charm, letterer Clayton Cowles, design and production Johanna Natalie. Maybe we've seen her before. I'm not sure, but it's a newer name to me. Group editor Heather Antos, editorial assist Cassandra Jones. Three covers. Cover A. The upper half presents the five lower deckers, including Tallinn, with Mariner holding Boimler in a friendly headlock. And the lower half presents the Cerritos. And beneath that, the upper deck, or upper deckers, bridge officers, are shown beaming in. And the cover's by Derek Charm. Cover B, the four lower deckers, four, only four, are running towards the reader, and from and they're apparently running from a smiling, cuddly, white alien catish thing flying through the air with flowers and hearts accompanying it. So as much as I'm kind of so-so on that last cover, I like the retailer incentive cover. So we've got Badgie with a particularly evil look in his eyes. He is sitting at the con and petting his alien cat, apparently in an homage to Ernst Stavro Blofeld, who, of course, is the famous Bond villain. So very cool. Love that cover. So we're going to get going, but just a little heads up. There's a whole bunch of mini stories that this begins in, which I think is quite creative, but it just is a little different. So here we go. Mini story number one, in sickness and in health. The entire Cerritos crew has been infected by an alien pathogen due to a failure in the transporter biofilters. Captain Freeman is asking Dr. Ta'ana how long they have before they all die. The sarcastically surly doctor says she will cure it before they all die and gives the captain the first shot of antidote, which cures her immediately. The doctor suggests the Federation reinstate capitalism so she can be given a raise. Mini story number two, the Cerritos encounter. Captain Freeman records a log entry reporting the discovery of a long-lost outpost from the early days of space travel. They contact them and confirm they're doing just fine. Mini story number three, a quantum of Solanogen. Captain Freeman records a log entry reporting an N-dimensional subspace filament extruding into their universe caused catastrophic system failures all over the ship, resulting in cascading disasters that threaten the crew's very lives. Or that's what she would be logging if the secondary systems did not come online immediately as designed and everything's fine. Compliments to the engineering team. Later, the upper deckers are in the ship's lounge, commenting on how eventful it's been lately, but how easily the upper deckers have handled the threats to the ship. Mariner says she's bored and needs some adventure. Tindy and Boimler try to talk her down, and Rutherford even points out that they are hurtling through space in a ship powered by barely contained matter-antimatter explosions, so powerful that it's warping the very fabric of space-time. Mariner states she got used to that idea a long time ago. Suddenly, the battle station siren is sounded. A voice reports they encountered a godlike energy being with hostile intentions. Mariner is stoked and screams with delight. On the bridge, someone reports the being has turned them into an ornament on a colossal Christmas tree. Mini story number four. And to all a good night. Captain Freeman attempts to talk the energy being into releasing them to no avail. Luckily, the energy being's mother comes onto the scene, chastises Trelane too, and sends him to his room for a very long time. And then they release the Cerritos, saying their kind will never bother you meat sacks again. Mariner is about to snap when she hears they are setting course for Tediosis 2, an extremely routine refilling of their deuterium tanks. Later that evening, Mariner and the gang enter a holodeck, and she orders it to generate the most dangerous adventure it can think of, where we could quite possibly die. After it acknowledges her request, the captain calls Mariner to the bridge, since something came up that has adventure written all over it. Annoyed at the holodeck adventure interruption, the gang go to the ready room to discover the long-lost USS Bonaventure is dead ahead. Mini story number 5, The Ocean of Infinity. Mariner happens to be a fangirl of the Bonaventure. Ransom continues with his briefing. The Bonaventure was an early Starfleet ship that was a precursor to the Constitution class. It was stuck in the Delta Triangle until the Enterprise, under the command of James T. Kirk, came across it. Kirk found many ships stuck in the Delta Triangle, where time passes slower than in normal space. The crews of the ships were still alive and living in peace. The anomalous field in the Delta drained ships of their energy and started to drain the Enterprise. However, the Enterprise and a Klingon D-7 captained by the Devious Corps were finally able to escape by joining forces and using a formula Spock had devised. Kirk recommended the area be made off-limits as a navigational hazard, and so it was. No one saw the Bonaventure again until now, but rather than being stuck in the Delta Triangle, it was traveling on a direct course to the Sol system at near maximum impulse speed. Captain Freeman sends a combined lower and upper decks away team to the Bonaventure to find out what happened to the ship and crew. Also to get it underway again at warp speed to get it back to a starbase. Part of the team goes to engineering to get the warp drive running. The rest go to the bridge to find out what happened to the crew. The captain's log says once the Enterprise made it out, it inspired them to do the same thing, but it took them longer since they did not have Spock's formula or a ship with functioning engines. They finally made it out and set course for Earth at maximum warp, which for the Bonaventure was only warp 2.5. The log entry ends. Phillips and his engineering team get power working, and then the warp engines. Quickly after that, the ship goes to warp all by itself and quickly exceeds its 2.5 warp maximum. Helm is not responding, and Phillips in engineering reports they cannot shut it down either. With this high warp strain on the core, it will breach in as little as 15 seconds. Ransom calls for an emergency beam out. But for some technobabble reason, they cannot contact the Cerritos. Suddenly, everyone on the bridge, except for Ransom, are beamed off the ship. Ransom is left alone in the ticking time bomb that the Bonaventure has become. To be continued. Hmm? High adventure,
what'd you think of
that, huh?
That little ship, what'd you think of it?
The Bonaventure?
Yeah.
Well.
Cutest thing you ever saw?
Well, since the animated series. I've seen other versions of the Bonaventure over the years that was not based on what was presented in the animated series. And I think it looks kind of stupid. I mean, it's a Constitution class with a really tiny primary hull. I mean, there are other differences, but that's the main thing. What do you think of it?
So that's how it actually looks in the cartoon?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Well, yeah, I have not seen that cartoon in a long time, by the way, that episode. But right. I looked it up online, and there were lots of pictures of that version of it.
Really? Wow.
And there are other versions that must have come from other sources, like maybe fan things. I don't know.
I did not know that was actually in the show.
Well, I think this whole issue is based on an episode.
Yeah, I know. It's the time trap or whatever.
Right. Well, I don't remember okay, great. You know the name of the episode. I didn't, but yeah, I remember I liked Taz when it was first on, and I was a much younger person, but then I really haven't watched it very often since then. It's not one of those things I get some popcorn made up and watch old episodes of.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's kind of ugly. I'm not crazy about it, but whatever.
With the little eyes in the front, I loved it.
Oh, you loved it? Okay. Well, why would you, okay? So you got to make it look at you have to make it look different from the Constitution class. I get that. But why do you make the primary hull so small? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Interesting choice of how they made it look different.
Yeah,
and the nacelles look a little different. You know, kind of bulky as you go towards back towards the back of it.
Yeah. Right. I do like how they say this is from a time after Archer, but before Giorgio.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And they're
okay.
Like mm-hmm. in this time that we never see. Mm-hmm. It's one of the little captions at the bottom of some of the pages that are pretty hit or miss for me as far as whether they're funny or not.
Yeah, so this isn't the first time they've got little captions at the bottom, and I tend to ignore them. Although I read some of them, and some of them were okay, but quite frankly, when they do that, I kind of ignore them. I probably shouldn't. Some of them are helpful, but usually they're just trying to make some snippy comedic thing.
Right. Well, as far as placement of this story goes, we know that it definitely takes place before the end of season 4 of the show.
Okay.
Or no, season 5. What was the last season? 5?
5. 4? 5 is the last one.
5. Yeah.
5 is the last one.
Yeah. So I guess it takes place in 5, but not at the end yet.
Which would kind of make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, Boimler doesn't have his beard.
Oh, that's great. So it might be 4. But Talyn's on there, so I don't know.
Yeah.
When did she show up?
She showed up a while ago, like as a one-off kind of thing, and then they brought her back, you know, with that other group of lower deckers. And then she became a normal member of the cast. Was it 5? It was either 5 or it was towards the end of 4.
Yeah, it had to be the end of 4.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways.
I like her. I like that character.
Yeah, no, she was a good addition.
Yeah. At first I was wondering, why are they bringing her in here? It just upsets the whole balance. I mean, you'd normally have a Tindy and Rutherford pairing off, and then you, although not always, but frequently. And then you'd have some, and then you'd normally have Mariner and Boimler pairing off. And then now you got this fifth wheel in there. But now they, you know, they pair her off with different people. So it works out fine.
Yeah. No, I like her.
Yeah. So how do you like the mini stories format?
Well, at the beginning when it's just kind of a joke, it's fine. I mean, it was just trying to, like, yeah, what if every mundane thing was its own episode? I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, right.
And then, yeah, like you said in the synopsis, that the planet's name is actually TDS-5 or whatever. That was pretty funny.
I thought that was funny. That was good. So most of those mini things I recognized as either a blatant or kind of spin on an existing episode.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Were you able to match them all up?
I did, and some are stronger than others. That whole thing about the I thought the cage was a decent match for the first one. That was talking about, you know, an outpost from the early days of space flight. And then they came into contact with them and like, they're fine. So I matched that one up with the cage because that was, you know, kind of similar, not the same 100%,
Right.
Because that was a colony ship or something, right? That crashed. And then Pike and the Enterprise, you know, come upon them. They pick up the radio signal or whatever.
Right.
There you go. So I kind of matched that up. Not 100% the same, but similar. And then another one I matched up to Mantrap, which is the first broadcast episode of TOS.
Salt Vampire one. Which one did you do that one to?
Well, it's the same one.
Oh.
So, again, yeah, okay, so I did, so Mantrap was a little bit like that. In that one, the Enterprise was tasked with contacting an established colony. I mean, well, colony was two people.
Right.
But an outpost kind of thing. And then things happened. So I kind of sort of matched up with that. And then the last one that I thought maybe had something to do with it, but I think it's a stretch, is, well, I don't think it is at all. So while I was doing a little bit of research, The Last Outpost came up, which was a TNG one, which was like, okay. And then I reminded myself as I read and reminded myself of it, it's like, that's not a good match. So that one invited the Tikan Empire outpost that was like from a totally different civilization. And then the Ferengi and the Enterprise ended up trying to, well, the Ferengi wanted to plunder the outpost and the Enterprise wanted to just find out about it. Anyway, so that wasn't a good match. I think the Cage was the best match.
Okay. And did you match the other two?
I tried. So now the Quantum of Solanogen was actually a dead-on rehash of the TNG episode Disaster, which was in season 5. So and they used the same thing. The same n-dimensional subspace filament caused massive damage to the Enterprise D.
Hmm.
But the joke with this one is that I mean, in that one, it was kind of like a earthquake. It was a disaster. It was like a disaster movie. You may be a little young for this, but there was a big run of disaster.
Towering movies. Inferno and
exactly Poseidon. All those things.
Yeah, I remember them.
Yeah. So this episode of TNG was like that, and this filament just caused massive damage, and then, you know, a lot of the characters were paired up with different people in different parts of the ship and having to get through the disaster. Mm. And that's what this was hugely reusing. But then they say, oh, the secondary systems all kicked in. Everything's fine.
I did not catch that.
Which is funny because you'd think, you know, a big sophisticated ship like that, you'd have secondary systems kicking in. So I get the joke.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great. I didn't catch that. It was the reference to that episode. That's good.
Yeah. And then in Sickness and Health is pretty obvious. So that was basically eerie.
What
was that?
What's in Sickness and Health?
In Sickness and Health, where they contracted.
Oh, the first something. One. The first one. Oh, yeah.
So, you know, that I thought that was channeling Miri, probably the strongest.
Right.
And even
the naked in Miri, the naked time could. I mean, the naked now, that's another the one. Naked time. Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
the naked now, the naked now was the TNG version. And what did they call?
I think it was
what did they call the TOS version? The naked time? Maybe.
But anyways.
But yeah, that's another one. Although I will put forward that in Miri, people had boils on their face.
Boils, yep. No, that's a better one. Yeah, and I liked in that one what's her name? Ta'an.
Yeah, right.
That I did it in 20 minutes, just like normal, you know, because that's how long. That's how long these Lower Decks episodes are. About 20 minutes.
Yeah. That's a good joke, too. That's good. Yeah, it took McCoy, although that was a... I guess it took McCoy a little longer because that was a you know, a 48-minute episode.
Right, exactly. No wonder she needs a raise.
Right, exactly. And the whole idea of bringing back capitalism so she could get a raise, I like that. Was a good joke. I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the Ocean of Infinity that came back with, you know, that took over the rest of the book into the next one, you know, that's obviously, you know, channeling that Taz episode.
Right. And then there was also the Squire of Gothos. And Cat's Paw, too, right? Cat's Paw, they also turned into a little ornament, right? The Enterprise? Ooh. Or...
Well, okay, but that was okay. So that was a Halloween episode,
mm-hmm.
and they did turn they put the Enterprise into a rectangle of lucite, and turned it into a necklace, basically.
Right.
So
it was kind of like this ornament.
Yeah, it's kind of like an ornament. Yeah. Good point.
And then it was a very very similar ending to Squire of Gotham.
Yes.
The parents come in.
Now, they didn't call the character Trelane 2, but I did.
I heard that.
Yes. This is Trelane. This is obviously Trelane, everybody. But everybody knows that.
So I really liked it. The jokes about the what was it? The captain's log, where they're talking about how, again, it's a timing joke where they're like, oh, mm-hmm. Captain's Logs used to just kind of summarize everything in a little span of what, you know, was the same length of a commercial break, you know, that kind of thing. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
And we don't get those anymore in the new Trek stuff, do we? Where they just record logs all the time.
I think Strange New Worlds had done that, but I don't think it. Yeah, because I think Uhura did one, but more like.
I mean, they do them, but it wasn't like throughout the episode. Like,
agreed. Oh, I completely agree.
Coming back from the other network, this is what's happening.
Exactly. Yeah, because a lot of times this is streaming.
So. Right. Exactly.
There are no commercial breaks. Good point. Good point.
And then I like the that they showed them as Taz characters.
God.
The Taz Kirk instead of the Taz Kirk.
And Rutherford and Tindy are asking each other, why's Kirk so close to the camera?
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
So did they do that so you didn't have to draw the backgrounds?
I don't remember.
Because since they brought it up, it's like, yeah, it was Kirk and Spock. I mean, a lot of them, you know, they took up most of the panel in many instances.
Right.
And it's
like,
why did they do that?
And then I loved it when they were in his captain's log, they had the shot of the Enterprise getting a piggyback ride. And they're asking, how'd they even get that shot?
Oh, yes.
Like, oh, yeah, it was some drones they had recording it.
Exactly.
I thought it was hilarious.
It was something because everybody that watched Taz, I can say that, must have thought of things like that. Like in Balance of Terror, they were actually able to look on the viewfinder the inside of the Romulan ship's bridge. And it's like, how could they do that? I mean,
well, they say they connected into the cameras on the bridge.
Oh, they never said that in Balance of Terror.
I'm pretty sure they do.
I'm pretty sure not. But they never said the cameras. I mean, they said some.
Yeah, they might have said communications, something. Right.
Yeah, they said some mumbo jumbo how they were able to get a picture, but it was mumbo jumbo.
Yeah,
but it was darn handy when they did it. But it's like, how do you do these things? So I love that they were calling that out.
Yeah, and I still think like in Star Trek 3 when Sarek is showing the footage of Star Trek II as historical documents or whatever, and it's just like,
oh.
Why all the camera changes and the close-ups on Kirk and the hand and all that stuff? You know, yes. Obviously, it's because that was in Star Trek II, but it doesn't really fit into the, this is all security. This is just exactly. A security camera that's in engineering that just happened to catch it all.
Exactly. I like it. Yeah. You would expect it would be from a distance and right. Not necessarily them in the middle of the picture and blah, blah, blah. But well, I guess security.
Yeah. I just want to see Lower Deckers making fun of it. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Something I liked is when they showed the captain of the Bonaventure and you see the uniform and it's a different kind of uniform.
Yeah.
And it was like, cool. I like that. They made it different. I mean, it's got the little star on there. That's kind of different, but still gold. You know, it's kind of a sort of progenitor maybe to the future swoosh. So that's cool. And then, but then it was like, That collar, where have I seen that collar before? And so I went in and did some searching on the Goog. Actually, technically speaking, I used a different search engine, but that's kind of like Kleenex, I guess, by now. So I did a search and I popped up a very nice shot of Yeoman Colt on the away mission. And her, the collar of her, the cage uniform is almost exactly like the Bonaventure's. So I was like, oh, cool. Okay.
Not as colorful, I'm assuming.
Well, it was tan.
Yeah.
Or like a tan beige color, not blue.
Yeah.
So. And then.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
Yeah. So that's good. They kind of tied it into something. They just didn't just pull it out of the air. And then just, this is a minor point, but in the second pilot, Dr. Daner also has kind of a big material, a lot of material kind of collar, but not exactly the same as they use in the cage, but similar. And then of course, O'Hara in her TOS outfit. I mean, she had a bigger collar than the boys. So the ladies' uniforms in those three instances all had like bigger collars than the boys had. Just mentioning.
That's good. It also kind of reminded me of the motion picture pajamas a little bit.
Oh, because of the lighter white. Color and the yeah. Right. Yep.
You think everybody's dead at the end?
No. Of course not. It's an ongoing series. They can't be dead.
But I love the ending. Did you read the little caption at the end of this one?
Oh,
because no, this one was written for you, Ken.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it says come back next week or come back next month, buy the next issue, even though it's probably just gonna be the exploding ship on the first page, and then the rest of the pages will be blank saying, hey, thanks for buying the comic anyways. I'm paraphrasing, but that's what I remember it saying, something like that.
Okay, cool. Which
completely. And when I read that, I was like, "Oh, that's such a Ken thing."
Yeah, it's one of my pet peeves, man. So that all has to do with the penchant of some IDW stories to show on the last page the hero ship being destroyed in some way, shape, or form. And then you're like, oh my God, I gotta buy the next issue because the Enterprise or whatever is gonna be destroyed. And then you get to the next issue and either it never exploded, which is completely false advertising, or it did come apart and they come up with a lame way of putting it back together again. So at least the second one, they advertise the destruction of a ship and then you see the next issue and it is destroyed. Okay, so at least that's not false advertising. But anyway, yes, you're right. It's to me. It's for me.
This writer obviously heard you complaining and did something about it.
Heard me whining, whinging. Yes.
All right. Anything else?
I have one last thing to say, and that is about the Bonaventure. So let's talk about that again. The Bonaventures, and they talk about this in the book, although I didn't mention the synopsis, but the Bonaventures registry number is 1028. And then it looks like it's either a one. I think it looks like a one to me. And then NCC.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's like, that's, oh, actually, and there's another ship diagram. Yeah. Okay. So there, if you look at the marking on the ship, that's one thing. And then there's actually a schematic that, that Ransom is showing as part of his presentation. And it does actually show 10281-NCC. So that is a one at the end. So it's a five-digit number. And this is prior to Taw's days. And, of course, you know, 1701, famous registry number of the Enterprise. So their ship numbering standard really changed. Because, of course, we all know for all of Star Trek, the numbers keep going up. And that, and you can get an idea about how, what time frame the ships are from the number of the digits, you know, what, and I'm sorry, a five digit number doesn't make any sense compared to the time period where it's supposed to be and the registry numbering standards that they use for all the rest of, Star Trek.
Right. Yeah, no, it is weird. And I guess that's how it was in the cartoon for some reason.
Yeah, I guess so. They I mean they're showing it on the.
Right.
They're showing it in the book. I didn't bother going and researching in the episode, but.
Yeah, well, I have since you told me that that's how the ship looked like in the cartoon. I have looked it up and okay. That is how it looked. And that is the registration on that ship.
OK, there you go.
Pretty funny.
It is weird. It's weird. It doesn't make any sense. Now, let me also mention that as I was looking around, I did find somebody had done a rendering of like the forward view, the side view, the top view. You know how those people that are playing with their, you know, ship design software, their, you know, CAD CAM or whatever they're using to generating all this stuff. This particular person has one that looks just like the TAS-X episode, but its registry number is 10283-NCC. So I don't know why they didn't stay in sync with the TAS, but they didn't. But this is an individual doing it, so okay, fine, whatever. And then there's another picture of the Bonaventure where it's a model, and actually I think it's an Eagle Moss product. So actually it's something you could have bought back in the day. And it's called, it's the Bonaventure, and it's the NCC 1000.
Hmm.
And it looks different. It looks different from what was in TAS. So I don't know the legacy. I did not take the time to do the research. But somehow, somewhere in continuity, there must be a Bonaventure that looks like this because that's where Eagle Moss gets their stuff, right?
Right, right.
Although sometimes Eagle Moss does conceptual art. So maybe this was a conceptual art thing that never actually made it into a video or into an episode or a movie. I don't know.
Right. I don't know.
Hmm. Anyway. There's multiple Bonaventures out there with different registry numbers. But I would think that TAS would be the thing that would be setting the standard.
Right. Yeah. And I was not familiar with it, so I really enjoyed its cute little face.
it's a cute little face. Okay. That's all I have to say. I'm done.
That's it. All right. That's it. All right. Well, then we'll move on to issue number two. All right. Issue number two, all the writing and art staff is all the same, so I won't go through it again. Only two covers for me, lucky me. The first one is by Derek Charm, and it shows on one side we see Picard, Janeway, Scotty, Jadzia, Dax, and T'Pol, and they're facing off against the five Starfleeters, or five lower deckers that we're used to. And then the other cover is by Philip Murphy, and it shows Boimler dressed up as Mozart, flying out of the Guardian of Forever, and then behind him we see Tindy in a Taz-era medical skirt, and then behind her we see T'Lyn in like a Star Trek III Spock outfit, the robe. And then we see Rutherford in a cowboy outfit, and we see Mariner also in a cowboy outfit. All right, so here we go. Story. The lower deckers are finding themselves on a planet controlled by the Excalibian. And these are the same rock monsters from the Kirk episode where Kirk had to team up with Abraham Lincoln to fight off Kalis. So the rest of the crew were beamed back to the Bonaventure once the aliens noticed how young and vital these five were. The aliens give them the options to create their own destruction, which they're going to then broadcast. So in a scene very similar to Ghostbusters, how Gozer gave them the option to think of their own demise. As they're all thinking, T'Lyn thinks about mentoring. And that's what the aliens grab onto, and therefore they create mentors from the past. So we get T'Pol to be teamed up with T'Lyn, Jadzia to be teamed up with Tindy, Scotty is teamed up with Rutherford, Janeway is teamed up with Mariner, and season one, Stern Picard is teamed up with Boimler. When aliens realize that mentorship to the death is not a thing, and it definitely wouldn't make a very good broadcast, they then amp up the murderous tendencies of the duplicates. Before they can fight, Boimler takes it upon himself to give a long, heartfelt speech in front of a sunset that would make even Kirk envious. However, the aliens are not listening because they are too excited that the five clones are now all fighting each other. And some of them even have lightsabers slash energy swords. The lower deckers are no longer needed, thus they are beamed back to the Bonaventure. Back on the ship, we see that the Cerritos crew and the Bonaventure crew are all back. The lost Bonaventure crew were saved a long time ago by an alien ship before the Bonaventure could explode, and they've just been trying to catch up with the Bonaventure all this time. So the day is saved, and the two ships fly off into the sunset as the camera starts to roll the credits. However, we get a post-credit teaser. Admiral Janeway is given a copy of the broadcast of her doppelganger fighting with the other clones. She orders the computer to contact Admiral Picard to share this with him, but she can only smile as she sees Scotty pull out Jadzia's trill, and then the trill starts to fight alongside her. The end. Don't you wish you could have seen that?
Oh, well, I just found the whole post-credit thing weird.
Yeah, it's weird.
Why is it even here? I mean, you could have dropped that whole thing. It would have made no difference.
Yeah, but now we got the visual of the little slug being pulled out of someone's stomach and then fighting alongside her. They have that much murderous rage.
So odd.
Yeah,
it's odd.
It's funny. But, and why was she going to contact Captain Picard or Admiral Picard? That didn't make sense, because if she was notified of it, I'm sure he already knows about it. Maybe. I don't know.
Well, I took it as like two captains just sharing like a funny cat video or something.
Right. Yeah, but then she's like, computer, take your time. Yeah.
Well, yeah. What's with the
I want to savor it. I don't know. She just wanted to keep watching it before she has to tell him about it.
Talk to Picard. Yeah.
I don't know.
And why did the guy that let her know about it? Why? He looks like Tom Paris. He looks like a teenage Tom Paris or something.
I didn't think that. He's redheaded.
What? Hello? Yeah. So, well, not really. It looks like orange to me.
Yeah.
It looks like orange, but whatever. I mean, at first I thought, hey, a really young Tom Paris. Why are they drawing Tom so young? And it's like, no, it's not. That's just some ensign or something.
Yeah. She calls him anyway.
Yeah. I just thought overall there were just a lot of holes in what was going on in this one, but whatever. It was cool seeing the with the rock guys, whatever their names are. Right away I was thinking like, what? Okay. It's the Metron or whatever the name is. The rock guy. So they're going to redo that. Yeah. That Lincoln episode. I think it gave the opportunity for them to be able to bring in some other famous characters from the franchise. I guess that was good. And that is a way of doing it. And I just found, I really like the joke where the alien is saying, we need to learn about the concept of mentorship through deadly combat.
Right.
No, you mentorship doesn't require death to learn about it. But they don't really care because, they like to see spectacle. Really, that's what they want. They just want to see spectacle.
Right.
They're not really looking forward to learn anything.
Nope. No, it was funny. Yeah, the whole mentoring to death.
Yeah. It's like that that cover B.
Yeah, what was up with that?
Different characters. Well, okay, so I do not understand why Boimler is dressed up like Mozart or whatever.
Right.
It's like that doesn't make any sense. Is he that much into Mozart? I don't get it. Tindy dressed up in a Taz outfit. Okay, fine, whatever. Mariner with a cowboy outfit. What?
And Rutherford, yeah.
Now Rutherford isn't Rutherford dressed up like Picard's detective guy?
Oh, maybe that's what it was. Okay, I thought it was cowboy, but maybe
he looks more. I think he looks more like a trench-coated detective.
Yeah, you're probably right.
PI or something.
Yeah, what was his name? Dixon Hill?
That's it, Dixon Hill. And, of course, Talin dressed up as Spock from the motion picture. That's fine. That's fine. Or actually, no, Star Trek 3.
Four.
Oh, four? Four. Oh, that's right, four.
The very end of three. The whale one. All of four, yeah.
The whale one, yeah.
Yeah, so but why is the Guardian of Forever there? I mean, That's a whole bait and switch. You would buy this book thinking, oh, I'm going to get a Guardian episode. And instead, you got Rock Monsters.
Bait and switch, baby. Bait and switch. and who knows? Maybe that comic, that cover had nothing to do with this issue.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, it shows them doing some kind of traveling and some costumes and stuff. But none of that happened in this book.
Nope.
So, whatever.
Oh, well.
Now, the main one showing them facing off. Okay, so the main cover, that makes sense.
Yeah, and that gives away the joke. It would have been better if you were really surprised when you got to that page when all these people started showing up.
Yep.
Just like when you're watching that episode, you're just like, oh, my goodness. Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
You were shocked.
Did you? I had read a little bit about that episode, and supposedly originally in the script, they were going to have Jesus Christ in it, supposedly. Right.
Yeah. No, that's what I've always heard too.
That's what and that was going to cause too many problems.
Right.
So they switched it to Lincoln or they switched it to Sarek or.
No, it was Lincoln. Yeah. Lincoln. It was going to be, Sarek, Jesus. Yeah. Kalis and what was his name? Admiral Green, the
human
Admiral.
Right. Okay. Well, that was an over preponderances of humans in that. But yeah.
Just two.
Just two. Well, why did humans get two?
Two humans, one Klingon.
The Vulcan and Klingon only got one.
That's true.
Anyway.
Whatever.
If it would have been Jesus, then it would have only been one human.
Oh, there you go. But yeah, Jesus was took the form of man.
I'm kidding.
He was killed. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway. Okay, so I was a little surprised at the beginning of the issue because I knew at the end of the first of the previous issue, issue number one, it wasn't just the lower deckers that were beamed off because I know Dr. Tiana and then Chax, they were also beamed off of the bridge. Yet only the young'uns popped up. So that kind of was like, what's going on here? I could have sworn it wasn't just the lower deckers. And of course, I didn't see what happened to the engineering people. So it was like, that isn't just a mistake. There must be something more to what's going on here with those other characters, being MIA. Mm-hmm. And so we found out as the issue progressed. It was just one of those like, wait a minute. Something's not right here.
Right.
So it had me checking the previous issue, like, where is everybody else? Anyway.
Yeah, and it's weird that they knew that the commander, what's his name? Ransom.
Oh, Ransom?
So somehow they knew that Ransom was the only person left on the ship, which I thought was weird.
That's a good point.
Because everybody was beamed up at the same time. How would they know he was the only one left?
Well, did they know he was the only one left?
Or no, did they say that. They say that, and then they say he's the only one, and he's going to have to eject the view screen in order to save himself. And then at the end of the book, we find out that that is indeed what he was going to do before everybody came back.
Right, that was funny. And then, of course, they said that what happened, and then it's all this convoluted thing, with all these characters from the past, and then Ransom's like, oh, I should have guessed that was what it was. No, you should not have, because that was totally unexpected, and there's no way you could have known that. So that whole idea that you can eject the view screen in starships, Did that come up someplace before and I totally don't remember it?
No, not that I've ever heard of.
Okay, good. It's not just me.
Yeah, and in fact, I mean, I thought it was kind of a dig at the Kelvin Enterprise where we saw the glass cracking when they were...
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I was like, that's a view screen, not a window.
Well, in the Kelvin world, actually, in the Kelvin world, it should be clear aluminum,
right?
Not something that can fracture like glass. But the whole idea that they made it glass or transparent, whatever, and not a view screen, was just another thing that didn't make sense that came out of the JJ verse. Because what can you normally see? I mean, things are so far away, you can't see anything with the naked eye. Unless it was like right in front of you. There is no use for a clear view like that. Anyway.
But it also had view screen technology on it. So.
Well, it replaced, yeah. You could overlay the
window.
The window. But why have the window? It's just a point of failure.
Right.
I'd rather have metal. I'd like to have metal around the whole thing if I could.
When they were underwater where it cracked, right? Like implying that it was too much pressure or something. I don't remember.
I thought the ship was getting hit
maybe
by Nero or something, and the
oh, it was that one? Okay.
I thought that's what it was.
It's been a while. I just remember it cracked at some point.
Well, or maybe that's when Admiral Evil was shooting at him from the Vengeance. I don't know.
Yeah, Marcus.
I think they were getting attacked somehow, and they were getting damage, and then it was like, oh, make it look like it's shattering, and everybody's gonna die on the bridge.
Right.
I don't buy it. Never let logic get in the way of spectacle.
So, what is the special wine that everybody drinks?
What?
Andorian?
Blood wine?
No, the Andorian wine or Andorian ale? No, it's not Andorian.
It's Romulan ale.
Romulan ale, Klingon
and
blood
Klingon
wine.
Klingon blood wine and
Silurian whiskey or Silurian.
Oh, they had that in here?
Well, they have a Silurian in here, or I think he's a Silurian. That's what I was going to ask you.
The
alien guy.
The guy. Yeah.
Isn't he a Silurian?
So the guy on the Bonneville Bridge, mm-hmm. or Bonaventure Bridge, not Bonneville.
Right.
Bonaventure Bridge. Yeah, yeah. So there's one panel that shows a Silurian.
Yeah, and what is the alcohol that they make?
I don't know. We could look it up briefly, but I don't.
That's
know
what all right, but. But then I remember one time they made a joke that it was made out of real Silurians or something like that.
What? That was a... Oh, Silurian brandy.
Silurian brandy. There you go.
So that was from one of the Alien comics? You know, Alien?
It was from one of the comics. I don't remember where it was.
Okay. So in Taws, that's a type of brandy manufactured by Saurians, S-A-U-R-I-N-S.
Saurians, not Silurians. Okay.
A reptilian type species. Is there anything else interesting? Oh, so when Kirk was split in half, he demanded from Dr. McCoy a bottle of Silurian brandy or Saurian brandy.
So that's where it came from? Hmm.
Apparently so. Yeah.
There you go.
There you go. And there's a Saurian right there.
Yep.
At least while they were stuck in the triangle, they were able to get some good brandy.
Now the other guy that's on that page, he just looks like Fred from Scooby-Doo with that blonde hair and that.
Oh, the guy. Oh,
that blue thing looks like his ascot. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Good point. Yep. Yeah, I think where the navigator and the helmsman sit, the panels look very odd. I mean, the one is okay on the left where the girl is manning it, but mm-hmm. you can only see part of what the Saurian is manning, and it looks odd. It looks small, and it looks like it's a different design from the... from the other station.
Hmm.
All right. I thought that
looked
odd.
But you see it in the other pictures, it looks okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, do we see a lot of other pictures?
Yeah, on the next couple pages.
Okay. Oh, yeah, it looks... Okay, so in the... Well, in the next pages, they look like the same thing. So they look like a more traditional design, where right. it's basically the same thing on both sides.
Right.
Where it's decidedly not... in that wide shot where all the characters are on the bridge.
Yeah, whatever. I see what you're saying, but I'm just saying later it looks okay.
Yeah.
Just a weird angle in that one.
Yeah. One of my favorite jokes in this issue is where, and it's endearing to Lynn to me. So there's that one where you're seeing her thought bubble. And she says, it is not logical to predict an unknown entity's communication. However, if I were to indulge myself with just a single word, I believe the next morpheme spoken is likely to be of, and then, you know, the rock guy, alien, says, mentorship. And then she's got the little thought bubble that says, well, fracking nailed it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's funny. I like that.
Yeah, it was cute.
The idea that she would actually be able to figure out, he's going to say mentorship. And then she's like, yeah, nailed it. That's funny. But she still does it in a very Vulcan way.
Right. But you don't think that he was reading their minds or to pick what it was? Or do you think he already had mentorship as what he was going to use?
I assumed he came up with the idea. He or his beings came up with the idea. That's what I thought. But
that's funny, because when I read it and everybody was giving their own thoughts of what it was going to be, I thought he was reading their minds and he just picked hers. But
maybe that's possible.
I mean, they had to read their minds to find out who their mentors were or their ideal mentors.
Right? Okay, but
otherwise, how would they know Boimler won?
And that goes more to my point. I mean that kind of supports my point that they had the idea, then they had to read their minds to find out who their mentors are. Now, what you might be, are you saying? So you're saying they read their minds to see what things that the lower deckers thought, and he read to Lynn's mind.
Right. And picked.
And came up with the idea that way.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Okay, that could be. I mean, they don't say that.
No,
but
they
it could
don't
be.
Say it. Right.
Okay. We could that's one of those things you could read either way.
Right. I could see it.
Yeah.
But they definitely read their minds to get who their ideal mentor would be.
Exactly. And isn't it funny it's none of the upper deckers?
The current upper deckers? No.
Exactly. Yeah. But you want new characters in here. I mean, the whole point of this is to get, you know, characters from the Star Trek world in here. So you're not going to grab an upper decker. But wouldn't you think that one of the upper deckers would be in here? But whatever. That's fine.
Nah.
Go
ahead.
I just find it kind of funny that that Boimler specifically asks for first season kind of surly Picard.
Right.
I like that joke.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
And then especially in that picture, you know, when they were all lined up together and you look at the pairings like Rutherford and Scotty, you know, they kind of have a similar look, kind of, sort of. Like maybe their eyes are the same or maybe their mouth's the same. Definitely Janeway and Mariner, their mouth is identical. Mm-hmm. Their eyes are different, but whatever. And then you take a look at, of course, the two Vulcans. You know, they have a very similar look on their face. And then Jadzia and Tindy have a similar look on their face. And then you look at Rutherford and Picard, and it's like Picard is looking at him like, you jerk. And then Rutherford's like, don't hurt me.
Yeah, and I like
that. That's a good joke. I like
that. Right, and then Mariner's even giving him a hard time about it. Why would you pick this Picard?
How about the loose one that finally sat down for a hand of poker?
The poker game, yeah.
Yeah.
Or the senile robot one. Oh, wait, this is before that, so never mind.
Yeah. Exactly.
Anyways. I don't really have anything else. You? I mean, aside from the lightsabers, I kind of mentioned that in the synopsis.
Okay. Let me see. Things just didn't add up to me with what the captain was saying. So the captain of the Bonaventure says the ship was run away fast, but then it finally ran out of fuel. Okay, so this is after they got out of the triangle.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to get back to Earth. And the ship got out of control and they couldn't slow it down and then eventually ran out of juice, whatever. Fine. And then this other aliens that came out of the blue took them and they were trying to catch up with the ship. Fine, whatever. Yet when the Cerritos away team gets on the ship, they're able to get everything going again. even the warp engines that jump to warp. So did the Cerritos engineering team bring, quote, fuel, whatever fuel is? I mean, what's fuel with a starship? I mean,
dilithium,
you've got
right?
dilithium crystals. Well, that's not the fuel, though. The dilithium crystals is the way you were able to take the raw energy created by the matter-antimatter explosion and then funnel it into something that could be used in the engines for the warp drive and stuff. So that's what dilithium crystals were for. So was it antimatter? Is that the fuel, quote, fuel they're talking about? But anyway, that's kind of a side thing. But so did they, whatever the fuel was that was missing, did the Cerritos team bring some over? Because they got everything running and the ship was beyond 2.5 before you know it, warp 2.5.
Right.
So that's an inconsistency. I don't get it. Let's see what else. Another thing that was odd. So they're saying all this stuff about, the captain says, the team would like to get back to Earth under our own power at 2.5, even if it takes longer. And it's like, okay. Or the Cerritos could just use their tractor beams to take you into tow. I mean, can't you have a ship in tow and go to warp? Or is that not possible?
Yeah, no,
I think it is.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, so I don't know. There are a couple of things about the ending that didn't add up, but whatever. It's a cartoon. Which, even with this style of art, and because it is supposed to be a comedy, uh-huh. You know, there's more slack given to it to come up with things that don't make sense.
Right.
Oh, it's just an animated. Well, it's a comic book. Everything's animated. But yeah. Anyway, just thought I'd point that out. That's it. That's my last comment.
That's it. All right.
Yeah.
All right. So next week we're going to do Star Trek.
Yeah, we're going to get back to 2022.
Right.
But and so we're going to be
27?
Doing. Yeah, so issue 27 of Star Trek 2022 and Defiant 22. Issue 22.
Yeah, so we're starting a new storyline with Defiant, and we're continuing the universe is destroyed with the thesis.
Exactly. Which tells you that their time frames have to be a little different.
Mm-hmm.
But not 100% at the same. They're not synced in the same point in time.
But we'll get there for the lore war.
Yo, for the lore war. Yes. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I'd like to find out what the heck's... I want them to get over with all this Star Trek 2022 thing where... So they came back into our dimension, but they don't see any stars. So that's how they ended it.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to seeing what, you know... How do you get out of this? Somehow they were able to get out of this. And I'd like to see how they do it. I just don't want them to do it in a really lame way.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Okay. I think I've made similar comments in the past. So I hate repeat. Sorry if I'm repeating myself.
Yeah, you're all good.
But I am looking forward to seeing how that resolves.
And we'll be one step closer next week.
There you go. There you go. Cool. Well, thanks everybody for joining us on the review.
Later.
Thank you for listening to Star Trek Comic Book Review. All Star Trek stories and characters are copyrighted CBS Studios Incorporated. All music, stories, and characters discussed are for entertainment purposes only. You can email us at startcomicbookreview@gmail.com. Visit us at our website, www.stcomicbookreview.com. Subscribe to us via iTunes or friend us on Facebook at first name ST Comic, second name Book Review. See you next time on Star Trek Comic Book Review.
Let's get the hell out of here.